Oh. I think your audio just went out again.
Actually appears muted.
Yeah, Chief Sentman, you're muted.
Okay, how about that?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh my gosh, did you get my whole introduction? Or
No.
did I get a... All right, take two. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the special meeting of the Orange County Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council, SB 823 Subcommittee. Today is Monday, May 17th, 2021. And I will do the introductions and roll call real quick. My name is Steve Sentman. I am the chair of the 823 subcommittee. Lynn Garrett.
Here.
Thank you, Lynn. Steve Kim.
Here.
Thank you. Judge Moraki.
Here.
Thank you. Raymond Sanchez.
Here.
Thank you. Don Smith.
Here.
Thank you. Kim Doyle.
Here.
Kim. Laura Jose.
Here.
Laura, Megan, Medlin.
Here.
Thank you, Megan. Nasli Restrepo.
She won't be here.
Okay, thank you. And Ken Santini.
Here.
Thank you very much. Did I say Don Smith too? Don, I got you. Very good. Very good.
Thank you.
You get 2 days of credit. Okay. Sorry for the little technology. We're still working through after thousands of Zoom calls. We're still trying to work through this, so. So item number two, all of you have got the agenda, the attachments. Item number two is discussion and approval of future subcommittee meetings and if there's a need for designees and or alternates. Before we start that, are there any public comments, Jamie, for item number two?
If anybody wishes to speak, if you could hit star not, oh.
Jamie, you're muted.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that. All right. If anybody wishes to speak, if you could hit star 9 on your phone or the raise hand icon on the Zoom app for item two. Nope, I have one request, and just ask Chief Setman, did you want to keep it at 3 minutes?
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Okay, I'll start it, and I will call on Anna Ramirez. Okay, go ahead.
Ms. Ramirez, welcome.
Hi, everybody. This is Anna Ramirez. I hope you can hear me. I know that there's been some struggles with the audio, but can you hear me well?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you, Anna.
Perfect. Hi, everybody. This is Ana Ramirez. I'm a policy analyst at Resilience Orange County. We're a youth organization based in the city of Santana. And regarding item number two, I actually have a question and wanted to know if there is still opportunity for additional community members to be added to the subcommittee. And some of the folks that I'm thinking of is youth, so that they could have, you know, some say. Especially youth that have been formerly incarcerated. So that's a question that I have and would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so just the one?
Yes, that's it.
One. Okay, thank you so much, Jamie. I appreciate that. Okay, so item number two is we need to set our future subcommittee meetings and if we need a need for designee and alternates. And I have a couple proposals. As we need to formulate the county's plan and submit that plan over to the Board of Supervisors for review to ensure that we are complying with the statute of SB 823. And then the actual plan that would go to the state, to the office, OYCR, the Office of Youth and Community Restoration, would be due in January of 2022. So what I do is I do have a proposal. At this point is to meet the first and third Thursdays of every month. That would begin June 3rd. And we would start at a 1:30 or 2 o'clock works better, but a 1:30 or 2 o'clock time. So I would just like to get the committee's feelings about that. And I have a couple other options too, but they're pretty tight in the beginning because I want to make sure that we meet and formulate and put the best plan forward with the window of time. And some would say, well, we have till January, but that'll be here before we know it. So any comments from the committee? And I also work with the clerk of the board on this too, because clearly they need to be here too.
I would just say currently I do have conflict, so I would need to have a designee if those are the dates that we select. I have conflicts in both June and July for first and third Thursday right now.
Okay. All right. Let me look at the rest of the group. Is the rest of the group good with that? Because my second option would be first and third Wednesday.
Chief, I'm attending on behalf of Deborah Bates for today, and I have in the past, as you know. I don't know if that's a conflict for her or not, or if it is, she's going to want to have a designee. You're probably looking at him, but so I'll check with her and we'll get back to you.
Okay.
You need to establish today. SSA will have a designee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go
ahead, Megan.
Wednesdays, I would have a conflict.
So Thursday still works better for you. Thank you, Megan.
Okay. This is Judge Motueke. Wednesdays, I would definitely have a conflict set calendar then.
Thursday works well. Okay. Lynn, how about you for Thursday? We'll stick with the Thursday for now and we'll work with
Tom. I'm good.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Ms. Jose, how about you?
Thursday works fine for me, but I think if it's going to be an ongoing calendar item, it would definitely be great for us to have backups because it just, I don't know if I can consistently commit to every time, right?
Yeah. No, and I understand that. I appreciate that. And also, I think that keeps the continuity of the group and keeping us moving forward is important, too. Ms. Doyle, you good with Thursdays?
Yes, I'm good. Thank you.
Raymond, how about you?
Yes, I'm good with that.
Okay, Steve for Thursday?
It works for me.
Thank you. Okay, so let's go with Thursday, the first and third Thursday. We'll make that at 2:00 because I know, Judge, if you've got calendar or sometimes we get held over at lunch, we'll go with 2:00 on the first and third Thursdays of the month beginning June the 3rd. And let's go ahead and get a designee. Well, that would be the time. Can we do it all in one vote, Jamie?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So me, for a designee for me, I will plan on being here, but I would obviously put Brian Prieto. He's on the call, so he knows that. Lynn Garrett, would you have a designee, or you plan on being okay with it?
I am pretty okay. There might be one or two. I would like to have Katie Ramazzani be my designee.
Yes. Her name sounds familiar. Thank you. Okay, Steve Kim, how about you?
Sorry, Chief. Yeah, I'm good. Just in case I need this, and I'd put Madeline Rodriguez, but I plan to be there every meeting.
Thank you. Judge Motueke?
Judge Craig Arthur, please.
Judge Arthur, thank you. Raymond Sanchez?
Yeah, I plan to be here in every meeting, so.
Okay, I appreciate that. How about you, Don?
I'm going to designate Alicia Lemire if I'm not able to attend. I'll see what I can do to move things in the next couple months, but Alicia can be here.
Appreciate that, Don. Thank you. Kim Doyle?
Heidi Gerrell. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Jose?
I'll put down Darren Thompson, please.
Thank you. Megan?
As usual, just me.
All right. Helsley's not here, and then Ken Santini, we're going to put you and then Deborah. That will work?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, everybody. Okay, so at this time, I will make a motion to have the SB 823 subcommittee meetings from this point forward. We'll meet the first and third Thursdays of the month beginning June 3rd. Designees, as stated, for myself will be Brian Prieto. For Lynn Garrett will be Katie Rassamy. Steve Kim will be Madeline Rodriguez. Judge Motueke will be Judge Arthur. Raymond Sanchez will be Raymond Sanchez. Don Smith will be Ashley Lemire. Kim Doyle will be Heidi Garl. Laura Jose will be Darren Thompson. Megan Medlin will be Megan Medlin. Natalie Restrepo is not here. And for Deborah Bates, it will be Ken Santini. Santini, I'll make that motion for our subcommittee meetings and designees. And if I could get a second.
I'll second. Megan.
Thank you, Megan. I'm just going to write this down. not too many of us on the group here. I've been holding a lot of votes on these meetings, so if you are opposed, let me know.
You still have to do a roll call.
You have to do a roll call. Okay, Steve Stettman, yes. Lynn Garrett?
Yes.
Thank you. Steve Kim?
Yes.
Thank you. Judge Moraki?
Yes.
Thank you. Raymond Sanchez?
Yes.
Thank you. Don Smith?
Yes.
Thank you. Kim Doyle?
Yes.
Thank you. Laura Jose?
Yes.
Thank you. Megan Methan?
Yes.
Nancy Restrepo, not here. And Ken Santini?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, now we'll move on to item number 3, which is discussion of SBA 23. Overview of our annual plan, including specific areas of focus, project timeframe, process for plan, budget development, and submittal to the state. And I plan on presenting on most of this for us to give us somewhat of an overview of where we're at. And this is just a discussion item on number 3. Just a reminder that the JJCC subcommittee developed a plan that goes before the Board of Supervisors prior to be submitting to the OYCR for our funding for 21-22, and the plan would be going before the Board of Supervisors to make sure we are aligned with SB 23 in statute. And in order to receive fiscal year 22-23 funding, county must file a plan again with the OYCR by January 1st, 2022. Just to keep in mind, by starting these meetings that we have 2 a month, that would take us right up through December the 14th. We would avoid most holidays, and I'm going to look a little bit into my crystal ball and believe we should have a plan together prior to that, but I wanted to make sure I gave the committee plenty of time to put their plan together. Just a reminder of before we start talking about elements of the plan, that SB 1991 talks about the funding and to have a plan, and just to, so we know forward, and we'll work with the budget forward, that the County of Orange for 21-22 will be receiving approximately $2.2 million for 2022-2023, approximately $6.6 million, and for 2023-2024, just over $11 million for the County of Orange. Again, to be eligible for this funding, the county will create a subcommittee, which we have done, and then we'll put a plan with the following elements forward, again, to the Board of Supervisors and then to the OYCR. In this plan, a description of the realignment target population in the county to be supported and served allocations from the block grant. A description of the facilities, programs, placements, services, service providers, supervision, and other responses that will be provided to the target population. A description of how the grant funds will be applied to address each of the following areas in need to development for realigned youth. And those areas are mental health, sex offender treatment or related behavioral or trauma-based needs, support programs or services that promote healthy adolescent development, programs that promote family engagement in the programs, reentry, including linkages to support employment, housing, and continued education, evidence-based promising trauma-informed and cultural responsive programs, and whether and how the plan will include services and programs for realigned youth that are provided. Some of those programs need to be non-governmental or community-based providers. We also will need to submit a detailed facility plan, a description of how the plan will incentivize or facilitate the retention of realigned youth within the jurisdiction, a description of any regional agreements or arrangements to be supported by the block grant, a description of how data will be collected for the youth and served, outcomes of youth served by the block grant, and I've already mentioned that this plan would be submitted to the OYCR on January 1st, 2022, and again, that's the Office of Community Restoration. The Office of Community Restoration has not been established as of yet. I'm on numerous statewide calls, and I think that's why they're looking in these next couple of months here to get a plan in place and for each county to put its committee together to get the first year funding, but forward, the OICR will be established under the Department of Health and Human Services in the state. For those of us that have already read the governor's revise, I know that there has been resources put towards OICR, but it's not established as of yet. Any questions about that information? Again, that's all in the Welfare Institution Code. I want to give ourselves some framework of what we're working on as we move forward. The next section I wanted to do was talk about some specific areas of focus, and two of our attachments that were given to you. One was a template that's been used by the state, which I want to go through and have some discussions, and more importantly, identify those on the committee, including our department, thinking that we have the specific information that's needed. But I thought it would be important before we went there is Chief Deputy Daniel Hernandez has submitted some program suggestions which would highlight some of the areas we have. I also wanted to go over what DJJ programming offers at this point to kind of put some guidelines and a framework around what we're talking about. And then we'll spend the rest of the majority of the meeting breaking down those sections with the attachment that I gave you. In those sections, what's the subcommittee composition, which we have talked about. We'll need to identify our target population, programs and services that we currently have and what we would need. Juvenile justice realignment grant funds, we talked somewhat about that. Facility plan, retaining our target population in juvenile justice system. Regional efforts and data. We'll break those down. With that, though, and because we're on somewhat of a time constraint for Chief Deputy Daniel Hernandez, I would like him just to go through the Orange County Probation SB 823 program suggestions. And also, I want to thank, I think this is compiles a couple of different work groups. I think Judge Moreke, you were on, led one of these work groups, as well as potentially Brian, Assistant Chief Brian Pareto. But this time, Daniel, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, can you hear me?
Thank you, Daniel.
All right. Everybody hear me? You good? Can you hear me? Anybody?
Yes, Daniel, we got you.
Thank you. All right, okay. So the document I explained briefly in the lead up to it at the last meeting, it's a list of suggestions that were compiled by staff in our facilities, supervisors, and then has had some input from some of our collaborative partners. But it is just that, it's a list of ideas and suggestions, so it's not intended to present the plan going forward, but it can, you know, hopefully maybe trigger some thought or suggestion. And I know NASLE brought up the point last time about logic modeling the process, you know, identifying where the gaps are and looking backwards and things like that. And so that is all what I would hope that the product of this subcommittee would accomplish. And so what you see in the document, I'm not going to, you know, read it obviously, but what you see in the document is some areas of focus that target traditional needs of our high-risk populations or our need populations. But going forward, these could be things that we could, as a subcommittee, start to target as far as, okay, well, how do we operationalize a need for reentry services, for example? What does that look like as far as measuring that and things like that? So this document is simply throwing out some ideas of some possible need areas. And so what I'm going to do is kind of go through some of high focus target areas that are in the document, and then talk about what we currently have in place that addresses these things. And then maybe, you know, throughout this process, the committee can start to look at weighing what we currently have, and then what identifying maybe what are those gaps and trying to bridge that. So as you go through the document, it starts with training. Training for our staff could look like a variety of things, including some of the trauma-informed gantry services and things like that that are identified in the statute. Our staff have all been required to attend trauma responsive training, adolescent brain development training, as well as cognitive behavioral technique training. All of the staff in all of our facilities have attended those types of training, but in preparation for perhaps having a population we traditionally have not had, that have been sent to DJJ in the past, then it might be, training might be an area of focus, might be something to look at. Are there newer areas where our staff might need training to help them to better serve this population? So currently what we have, I mentioned the trainings that have already been a part of our staff's development, but the state requires all of our staff to undergo at least 24 hours of additional training every year, and that's all of our facility staff. And so that includes a variety of topics and things that we offer throughout the year. So we have looked, our training division is looking out across the country for training that might help target this population or this new need here in Orange County. And we're looking at what other counties as well have either developed or have contracted out for training for their staff in relation specifically to 823. So something to consider. And I know, for example, Project Kinship is facilitating or is putting on themselves a reentry certificate program, things like that might be really kind of cutting edge, new, up to date things that are happening now that might help target this, working with this population and helping this population be successful, but specifically for the facility staff. The second area of focus in going through the document, there's a big section on programming, right? And so programming, I think this is where, again, we need to look at what the gaps are, what we see is not being covered in programming that we currently offer in the facilities. So just to briefly kind of go over what our programming looks like currently, the majority of therapeutic programs are, of course, offered by the healthcare agency. So healthcare agency provides one-on-one and in addition to a variety of groups. You know, some things have slowed down during COVID, but a variety of groups such as Seeking Safety and Substance Abuse Treatment, as well as programs specifically for human trafficking victims. There's a variety of mental health-focused, therapeutic-focused programs offered by healthcare agency. However, the state requires, in addition, at least 1 hour of pro-social programming to be provided, and that's done by our correctional officers, by our staff. So every night, at least 1 hour, is facilitated by our staff, and those are either pro-social activities, which could be getting a job, filling out a resume, to balancing your checkbook, to all kinds of pro-social activities or positive conversations such as victim empathy or a variety of topics. The state provides a list of suggestions of something like 20 different subject areas. And those are things that our staff facilitate every single night. So there's also some programs that we welcome from the community. We have had both Department of Education and other programs like Laura's House, which is a domestic violence shelter, has done a program with our youth, and we facilitate those things. Currently, we're doing those remotely. But one of the programs that has been effective, what we're targeting, was reducing violence within the facility, the fights primarily amongst youth with gang-related issues and tension, was a restorative circles program based on the Hovind Noble curriculum. And I know, in fact, Steve Kim helped kick that off in one of our units, and that's been going on for about 4 years now. And by successful, I mean, we do measure violence based on physical altercations between youth and the unit, has had a very measurable, dramatic reduction in violence in the unit. But moreover, if you go visit with those kids, the greater impact is that they see each other as a family. And that unit is one of the units that has youth who are with us for serious and violent offenses. And it's the kind of youth who would eventually have been going to the Department of Juvenile Justice or will be with us for many years or would have been with us for many years prior to D23. So it's been, this particular program's been used in only one unit, and that's again for kind of budget reasons. The Department of Education has been providing that. So that's, you know, again, kind of shows if we want to look at something that's measurable and can serve a purpose, that might be something to look at expanding or making sure is being provided in the unit that's serving 823 youth. There's also mention in the document about other pro-social vocational programs and things like that. And again, all those just very positive, you know, traditionally positive ideas or thoughtful ideas for what this population may benefit. Another key area is the need for obviously materials, supplies, and incentives. So incentives are, you know, things that of course can be used to generate positive reinforcement, internal motivation, participation of youth in a program, things like that. And so there's many suggestions in the document, like a commissary program or other types of just you know, positive incentive types of ideas. But that's something that again could potentially be looked at from a budgetary standpoint, that could be infused into the program or the plan to help promote positive behavior. There's a lot of mention of vocational, like I mentioned, career and technical education. What is kind of good timing is the completion of our multipurpose rehabilitation center at Juvenile Hall is slated for early December of this year, believe it or not. It's been about 6 years in the making. And that by design has two fully outfitted vocational rooms. One is a complete auto shop with the lifts and the wheel balancers and all that stuff. And the other large vocational room is going to be kind of a blank slate for plumbing, electrical, construction, things like that. And so we currently have, maybe a good segue on the education piece, is we currently have an MOU with the Rancho Santiago Community College District. And so they are currently providing post-high school graduate college education at our facilities. And they just started last year, right in the middle of COVID. So it's been all remote so far, but they are providing classes remotely, but the MOU and the intention in all our discussions leading up to it was 5 days a week in-person instruction. And so we already have that MOU in place. And so we're hoping, and what you see in the document, is we're hoping to expand that either with Rancho Santiago or someone else to provide certificate type programs in the vocational area for things like auto shop or construction. We will have the facilities to at least provide the foundation for that. Another key focus is mental health treatment. What I want to make clear is we the majority of this population that we currently have, they're typically you know, going to be youth that grow older with us, youth that are with us for quite a while. And what we've seen with the majority of these youth is they stabilize. We have a lot of these youth who are doing very well. However, because you won't have Department of Juvenile Justice anymore, I just want to make sure that the subcommittee evaluates and considers the possibility of having to provide services to the most challenging youth that we can possibly have. And we've had those youth in the past. Those are typically the youth that go to DJJ. So what I'm talking about is we could have individuals who are severely high mental health needs, both behaviorally and even psychiatrically, be it severe mental illness, self-injurious behaviors, violent acting out, things like that. And so while a lot of you, what you see in the document is you see very positive, and it's about seemingly dealing with youth who are ready for that, there's going to be a lot of youth, or maybe some youth, that aren't. And so we want to really try to plan for being able to provide services to those most challenging and most in need, especially from a mental health perspective. So when it comes to mental health treatment, there is one gap that we currently have is the lack of 24-hour care when it comes to mental health needs. And so it's just, again, something to consider. Staffing, we would likely, from the probation department's perspective, be looking at enhancing the staffing levels in whatever unit is housing these youth. And this could potentially lead into, from a less restrictive perspective, as you view our system, they could potentially be going to our camps. And so in addition to providing additional staffing to whatever location these youth are housed in up front, we may want to consider even additional staffing in a single unit, for example, at each of our camps, where these youth could potentially go in a step down practice to take part in different services at the camps, have a more semi-permeable membrane of a facility to be able to leave the site, come back, go to services off-site, things like that. So again, staffing is just something to consider as well. And then I think the final section in the document you see is the reentry section. And I just think there's a lot of great ideas in there. Again, sky is really the limit when it comes to reentry services. I think we, as a system, could use help in that area. But again, that would get back to how do we measure that? And of all the great ideas that I think are in the document, it's going to be about narrowing down what the needs are and what we want to designate funding for and put in the actual plan. When it comes to reentry, things like transitional planning for the youth, having former system involved folks or folks who can be mentors or identify with their youth, who can work with them prior to or as soon as possible, and then prior to release, connecting them with services, making sure they get there, working with them and holding their hand outside the facility. A couple of notable points on reentry is we want to be considerate of transportation needs. And so transportation has typically been a huge barrier for our clients, no matter where, adult or juvenile. So just something to consider in development of a plan, consideration for transportation, whether that's including that in any kind of contract or plan, or also just providing funding for a transportation service or something like that, helps to, again, help people be successful. What we currently have regarding reentry services is, of course, we welcome the services of a lot of providers, and we help to get them in the facility or provide remote services and connect with our youth. We also have a single supervisor that's assigned at Juvenile Hall, who's our transitional coordinator, who works with social services, for example, to reactivate Medi-Cal if someone needs Medi-Cal to get into a particular program. And they work with the healthcare agency and their mental health workers to help navigate getting into services or community clinics upon release. And so we have a person designated to do that. On the probation side, and they can kind of be our single point of contact in trying to help a youth navigate the different services. And our liaison, this particular supervisor, goes to the OCREP meetings and gets familiar with a lot of the community resources that are out there to help connect kids and answer questions or make sure a youth, at least to the door, again, that's the gap, to the door of our facility, helps them get what they need. And then once they get out of the facility, that's perhaps where we can use some help. So So again, we provide the document. It's simply a list of ideas and suggestions that have been compiled. And so just so that this group wouldn't have to start with a blank piece of paper. Now you're looking at the template. A lot of these things can maybe fit into the template, and of course even more ideas that aren't in this document. And then maybe we can work, probation anyway can work to help the committee gather any needed data that's needed to identify what these needs truly are, and things like filling out what the target population, demographics of the population we can provide, and then when it comes to outlining what the outcome measures are going to be going forward, we're going to have to look at how do we, what data is available, if it's not available, how can we make it available, and collect it going forward. That's it, Chief. That's all I got.
All right, Daniel. Thank you. And again, all of you should have received that document. Again, it's intended to just provide a framework for us, and I also just wanted to briefly go over what DJJ offers. And I'm thinking we'll be able to go through this template and start to identify areas that we may already have in place, areas that we need to enhance, and more importantly, identify any of those gaps along the way. We're fortunate, I was talking to Ms. Doyle before everybody else got on the line, and when you look at other counties across the state, and I've been very engaged with other counties across the state, many of them don't even have any of these type of programs offering for youth. So I think for our youth board, we have a great deal of things in place, and this is a great opportunity to build forward. I just wanted to see if there's any questions related to where Daniel, just thank you, Daniel, for presenting that before I talk a little bit about DJJ. And then I intend just to spend some time going through the template and identifying some committee members that would have information. For example, this is what Daniel had brought up. When we're talking about our target population, that's more likely we would be able to provide that from our records on the type of youth we have for, and then we would just go through each section that's expected by 823. But I want to see if there's any questions of Daniel. He unfortunately needs to leave at 2:30, so I just wanted to make sure if there's anything that Daniel could cover. If not, we'll keep moving forward here in the interest of everybody's time. Okay, thank you. So DJJ's programming, just go to www.cdcr.ca.gov, and I've also talked to the director of CDCR on a variety of different occasions to talk about the type of programming, because when we think of this program for all of us that have worked with juveniles for a long period of time, what is the difference between DJJ and here in the County of Orange that we may be missing? What do we have that's similar, and then what do we need to enhance and build upon? You look at SB 823, its intentions, the biggest area was to keep youth locally, was what DJJ was missing, meaning that if a youth had to go to Stockton or a youth went up north, they were removed from their community, and understanding how important that community is and part of their attaining the skills that they'll need to get back into their community to be successful. Now with DJJ, they have a reception center and an intake process. I think we're very similar in that I wouldn't say we have a reception center name, but some of the things that occur right when a youth we get, we want to be mindful that that there is a mental health evaluation, which, Dawn, you could help me if I'm not clear in saying that correctly, but I would imagine we do some type of a mental health evaluation, as well as a medical evaluation of the youth. When they're brought in, those are key components in their success. They do an academic evaluation. So, Lynn, as I understand, I would believe we have an academic evaluation that takes place. There's a variety of psychological testings that take place. And then there's an initial treatment plan that's put together to start moving the youth forward and identifying what their needs are with an intake process. Now, we've had a long-standing, as long as I've been with the probation department, intake process, but we want to probably be more specific with these youth. As Daniel had mentioned, they're going to be with us a longer period of time, potentially. So it's not, sometimes our youth and our length of stay is shorter, and you're just trying to address their medical needs and obviously their educational needs, but we don't get to it, maybe not as in-depth as we would want to with these youth. Some of the interventions that are put in that initial strategy for youth, and we've talked about the aggression, they call it AIT, which is aggression interruption training, but I think we have something similar to that. CBT, we use that, we have that in place. They have girls, gender-specific programs that they use in place. I'm just trying to look at some of their strategy here. A victim awareness, I heard that mentioned, what Daniel brought up. And again, as we go through the plan here, I think we'll be able to identify key elements with what we have, but we also want to look to what we want to build upon.
Steve, can I mention something real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Daniel again. One thing I forgot to mention under the programming section is, because you mentioned CBT or cognitive behavioral treatment or interventions. Cognitive behavioral techniques or treatments are shown to be the most effective as far as reducing recidivism for youth in our system. And so we've trained our staff in those techniques. But what's been difficult is for our staff to be the sole provider of that service. You have, of course, staff that are better at it than others. It's a lot of times it's a one-on-one or it's a small group modality, and it's difficult to do when you're having to take care of everything throughout the day in the facility and get lunch served and showers taken care of and things like that. And again, it is a skill, and so what we've struggled with is consistency when it comes to application of CBT by our staff to us. So something that I would recommend and look forward to is to having that provided somehow on a consistent, regular basis. And so when it comes to programming, and it comes to effective programming, we want some kind of cognitive behavioral program that can be applied specifically and consistently. So what Chief Simon's referring to is we do have at the Youth Guidance Center ART, aggression replacement therapy, which is provided by our staff, in addition to healthcare agency staff, but having a program like that or a modality that can be provided consistently would be something else that I think should fit into that program. Thank you.
You know what, Daniel, and I agree with that too. I think it's going to need to be that collaborative approach, which we've seen in a variety of areas in all of our county's criminal justice systems. Is when I used to work at juvenile hall many years ago, care and custody of youth was our primary focus. That's still the focus of our staff, but what you find out is when the youth are able to develop a pro-social a relationship with our staff and see them more than just as staff working at probation, and to Daniel's point, we see those improvements in our youth. And I think what's key with that too is using our outside providers too, and using that wraparound approach, if I can use that term, in working with our youth. I've sat through a few of the restorative circles, and I've seen some of the different things, definitely before COVID and as we move through COVID here, bringing those things back in, but making sure that our youth are engaged and involved with more than just the what's legally mandated. I remember youth would just go to school, they would have some free time, they'd get a phone call, and day after day of that repetitive, that type of programming, and that's not really programming to what youth will need. Again, with DJJ, I talked about the reception center. They have intervention strategies that they use, educational services, so again, it's a big title that we'll need to break that down. Career technical education, and I know Judge Moike has mentioned this, and I've actually met with our superintendent from DOE, and some of these things are already in place at our juvenile hall. In one of their classrooms, they've taken an old wood shop classroom and developed it and moved it more to career technical education, as well as our multi-purpose center that'll be opening up. So we're we're going to have foundationally these things in place. We'll just need to put in that programming. One thing I will tell you across the state and challenges me as a chief here in Orange County is we don't have too many female youth, but we need to be aware of when that, you know, when a female youth comes in that may be a secure track youth, what we'll do. There'll be some options right now. Clearly, we would look to make sure that the young person is in some type of programming quickly, but there may be opportunities maybe in neighboring counties. We're not sure at this point, but when you have your female specific programs as well as your sex offender or sex behavior treatment programs, sometimes those numbers are smaller and it might be difficult or challenging for us to provide all of that necessary programming for just a youth or a youth or two. So I just want to be mindful as we build our plan forward that we're able to treat our female youth here if need be, but to be mindful as plans are developed across, especially in the southern region here of California, let's just say a county, you know, Riverside County does a specific gender responsive female program, that we want to be aware of that and have the flexibility within our and working with the bench to make sure that they're aware. And you know, maybe a young lady goes to that program for a period of time and then comes back on the reentry part with us, but maybe the specific program we would use somewhere else. Daniel did mention the mental health treatment programs. I too agree. We have, I'm just going to label it, it's a great system, but it's a reactive system at times. We're reacting to a youth that's already elevated in those crisis type behaviors. And I think it'd be really key to not only have a 24-hour setting, but you have a team member, an individual that's actually working in the same housing or living unit with the staff each and every day to help youth that have those mental health needs. Now, some are very extreme on those mental health needs, and some may just be just what a young person's going through as they're in their teenage years. But we want to make sure we address those to have that capacity built upon their release. I talked about the sexual behavior treatment programs. DJJ is known for those programs, and we can get more detail. I know we have a level of programming for that here, but that will be real key too on the type of youth that come in that would need that treatment. And then lastly, the reentry program is always an area I think we can enhance and build upon. My awareness of Project Kinship, I'll just use that now. There are so many things that our community can offer our youth as they get released, that probation officers do a key point to it, and their job is to manage them within the communities, but there's so many other pieces that I think on the reentry side that we'll need to build upon. And those are the key components that DJJ focuses on. And I pulled all these from their website, and I've actually spoke with them so that we have kind of the high end what we're looking at, and we want to make sure that we build upon to the future for our youth. Want to make sure I didn't miss anything. Any questions so far? Again, this is very difficult to do on Zoom. I know, because I'm looking at a piece of paper and so are you. And, okay, Laura, I saw you waving at me, or you just want to...
No, I'm waving. I put my little hand. I just,
okay, Laura, thank you.
It seemed like an appropriate time to just throw this out there, because you were talking about gender-specific programming, and I'm sure that at the hall, we currently have, you know, protections in place and policies in place to address trans youth and non-binary youth. But I think that's something we should also keep in mind, since we are building some programs from, you know, the goal is to expand programs. And I know we're not there yet, but at some point we're going to be talking about facilities. And I think it's really important to keep in mind that group of kids, particularly even sometimes the non-binary kids, can be more difficult to kind of address their needs and their social safety and their psychological safety than even sometimes very specifically identifying trans kids. So I just think that's something we should keep in mind, to not sort of take off our list when we're thinking about facilities and how we're going to organize programs. Like I said, I'm sure probation and healthcare already have some of those things in place. I don't know what they are, and I'm just quite sure that they do, but I think we can, you know, make sure that we build on that when we're thinking about programming.
Thank you, Laura. Again, I think what we need to look forward in programming, you bring up a great point that youth, there are many needs that we'll need to build upon. We're highlighting some of the high-end ones, but we will have some specific areas to be ready for that. And again, I think ultimately, I always say we want to make sure we provide every option for the bench, but more importantly, is providing every option for the youth we serve to build that capacity in them so they can get into the community and be successful where they're at. So thank you for that point to bring out. So again, we have the handout that Daniel provided that kind of addresses some of, and many of you on the call are all engaged or involved in one way or another with that type of programming we've had. I've talked about DJJ. What I'd like to do is just go through the rest of our time here, or whatever time it takes, to at least identify the specific areas that are listed in this template. I will tell you, across the state, most departments are using something similar to this, because when you look at what the statute says, it's very clear on what needs to be provided. This kind of gives us some guidelines as we move forward. But I would like to do is just go through, and I can read off what the topic is, and as a group we can decide. For example, the first one is briefly describe the county's realignment target population. And I would want to get your input and others' input. And even after we leave today, if you think more about that input, you can put into this plan. Because our next meeting, we really should start gathering the information that we currently have, but more importantly, that we'll need as we put our plan together. So if everybody is good with that, I will focus your attention to page...
Chief Sentman, did you want to ask for public comments first, or did you want to wait until the end?
I think we're still all on item number 3.
Correct.
I'll just go to the end.
At the end of item 3?
Of item 3, yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, thank you, team. I appreciate that. Okay, so if I can put you to page number 4, ask the group please on the phone or on the call to page number 4. And part of the Welfare Institution Code, C1, is briefly describe the county's realignment target population. Now, clearly, by the law, talks about secure track youth are eligible youth to go to that would have previously been committed to DJJ, and I think that's just one area, obviously, but we want to break down more specifically the number of those youth. And I know our numbers aren't that high, but nevertheless, whether it's 1, 10 or 20, we want to make sure that we build a program forward that best serves the youth we have. So In looking at this section, I clearly believe that probation, we would have a key part of this, is if we have the youth with us. And I'm just wondering if there's anybody else on the call that think you would have some input here. I think you would have this.
Chief, that's just under WIC 1990 subdivision B within 823. It's already been enacted. That basically legally defines the population.
Okay.
And it's those who were eligible for commitment to DJJ prior to its closure.
Okay.
And further defined as persons who are adjudicated to be a ward based on a 707B offense or a sex offense under 290.008 of the Penal Code. So I think we kind of touched on this last time. I don't think it's kids that we would have committed. I think it's kids who are facing or are adjudicated under a 707B or a 290.008 offense. So I think it's a bigger, actually, population than the kiddos, the youth that we've sent to DJJ in the past. So I think it's anybody who's alleged to have a 707B and adjudicated for that, that would be our target population.
Okay. We could just take it right from the code.
Right. And then I think I agree wholeheartedly, probation definitely is can do a data grab on the demographics.
Okay.
And it might be worthwhile at that point to maybe even, if you are able to identify within that target population, the factors that Laura was kind of alluding to, and that is, you know, our transgender, non-binary youth, if it is possible to do a data grab at that point. Because then at least we're mindful, you know, that within that target population, there are all these various demographics that we should take into account for programming.
Can
can I point out one more thing? I absolutely agree with Judge Motueke. The other thing that I'm concerned about in reading the code is it seems like the court can also order individuals that are 14 and above, where before to DJJ was 15. So we have now another age group that we weren't necessarily adjudicating and sending into that type of program. So we do have 14-year-olds now. So I wanted to point that out as well.
Absolutely correct. Thanks, Kim. I'd forgotten about that.
And that's under 875.
And Judge Motueke, one more time, it was 1990. I'm sorry, I wasn't writing fast enough.
That's okay. 1990 subdivision B of the WIC.
Okay. So we'll use that as our target population. Okay.
Right. And then the age group is defined under 875.
Gotcha. Thank you. Okay. And again, when we look at, thank you, Judge Motueke and Kim, I appreciate that information. There's the demographics and identified target populations. That is key: age, gender, race, offense, and offensive history. Those are all things that are key to. Again, we have 707D, but within that, understanding the type of youth that we would have. Is there anything just initially here? With the transgender. I appreciate that because that covers the second page where it describes any additional relevant information pertaining to identified target populations. Is there anything else that we might be missing from the group? If we don't get it today, we just need to, if you look on to page 5, it does address that section that maybe something we would be missing. We want to be relevant information to help our youth, assist our youth.
This is a crazy thought, but this is the judge again. I was thinking that we have good information about our target population and where their communities are within our county, because I think there's a lot of helpful community-based information or support that we can give these youth knowing where their communities are. And I think we do grab that data, and it's something that we could have so that, you know, we could kind of maybe dedicate more resources to certain aspects of our county where there's a bigger population of our youth coming out of 823.
You know, Judge, I think you bring up a great point. I mean, Department of Education would be a great point, too. I mean, you know, they may have the attracting of youth, and even in social services, if they were youth that maybe came up through the social services. So when you think of all the entities that are on this call today, we all may have some community information about them. You're saying more targeting is if you've got a higher concentration of youth from a specific area and identifying those communities. Structures that are in place there.
Yeah, just a thought.
Okay. Everything's open at this point because I think foundationally we're in a great place. I've talked to last week was our statewide chiefs call, and I talked to a lot of chiefs that are really scrambling to figure out what they're going to do. On the other hand, we may have a lower number of youth, but I think our not only within our county resources, but within our communities, we can continue to build upon. Have, so just make a note of that. Okay.
I'm not sure if this is a crazy thought as well, but kind of piggyback, I think off of Judge what you were saying, many of those communities obviously have gangs in them, and so I think for some of our gang impacted youth, I don't know if they would automatically fall into this target population or if we want to call out that particular population for youth who are struggling after they join a gang. And so maybe some of the gang impacted youth would be great if they fall into this program as well.
Yeah, Steve, it's interesting you say that. I quickly wrote gang awareness, but it's beyond awareness at that point. It's impacted. I think impacted is a better term. Awareness should have happened probably much sooner than where we are in the process. So I wrote down impacted because it is an impact in whichever way it's driven, you know, the decisions that the youth made. So thank you for that.
One quick thing, Steve. I'm going to what Laura was sharing earlier. I really, I'm catching up on the conversation on what Daniel showed. I think it's an amazing template, and I love the training portion of it. I'm wondering also if we could include the population Laura was talking about into some of the training as well. It would be great to have that integrated into whatever training probation leads for all of us to get schooled up on you know, the LGBTQ community as well. So,
okay. Well, also, if you look at integrating services with our partners, not just probation staff being trained, but I've been to conferences with you, Steve. We hear the same message from experts out there, how important that is. Because now you're speaking the same language from the same, you know, information that we shared. So that's a great point. I'm really glad we have this little template here, because it does give a focus for people like myself that needs to have some kind of some discipline along the way here to keep us focused. So, okay, so again, we're not going to be able to cover it all today, but I think the conversations are moving here. When you look at these and keep writing down your information, because we'll be visiting this template throughout the next several meetings and other things could come your way. But is there anything else from any of our other partners on the call? And if there is, we can always come back to it. Just give me a page number, and we can go right on back to it. Okay, moving over to page 6, talks about program and services. Provide a description of facilities, programs, placement services, service provider supervision, and other responses that will be provided to the target population. This one will be a lengthy conversation started today, and I have no doubt into the future. When you talk about our facilities, at this time we have our juvenile hall. We have clearly the Youth Leadership Academy, and we have the Youth Guidance Center are the three juvenile facilities at this time. We also have youth reporting centers in our communities. So I would consider them part of the mix, because when you think about a youth that maybe they're not technically in a custodial situation, our youth reporting centers provide a level of structure for them and support and guidance that we can build upon also. So when we talk about, I'm just going to look at that here a little bit here, which is descriptive. I think they get a little more descriptive in here. So when you look at the outline that Daniel provided, or the information that Daniel provided, it does address some of those areas. But when I look at the other programs that jump out, or other services above what Daniel had mentioned, that anybody here on the call that can think of, that not necessarily at what facility it would need to be provided at, but that we may be missing or not addressing, we're going to get a little more in depth in the next couple of pages here on more specific type of populations. But I'm trying to think of other services that we would be potentially missing. How about on the educational side, Lynn, of other things? I know the career, that's not the CTE, career technology education is an area we're clearly growing in.
I sent Daniel an outline of everything that we're working on currently to find out what kind of access, particularly for the graduates, is what we're looking at, because we can only fund K-12 or those kids who haven't had a high school diploma yet. So we're looking into what can Title I do for us, what other things can we share.
Lynn, I think what a key point is too, and I think it's clearly a goal to achieve for every youth about going to college, but the reality is every youth going to go to college, what level are they going to go? They're building some of the vocational piece of it, and I'll even go back to an older term of trade schools and things of that nature, when you're really going to teach a youth a skill of some sort that they can go out and apply. Not taking away from college, I think you can do them both together, but I think being mindful, and what I saw over recently, in fact, the students there built a little table or a desk for me here that I have that now collects some of the different reports I'm constantly reading, but these youth were building these tables that would put IKEA to shame, although they could probably go to IKEA, and I probably shouldn't be in the notes there, Jamie. That's not nice to talk about IKEA that way, but their quality of what they build in teaching youth a craft that they can actually go to, you know, to an employer, or maybe we want to look out is find employers out there that want to hire and work with youth. And I would ask our experts there, probably Steve and Raymond, you guys are probably aware of community folks that want to hire, kids that have been in the system, but they're out, but they learn to trade. They learn something they can work with their hands. Because that's, again, that's an incentive for you, that they learn to do whatever it is. They learn how to build this desk like they did. And we've got a woodcrafter out there, a cabinet shop, for example, or something, that will hire youth to come in there because they already know the trade, I think that would be real key to making that connection as an example.
Well, one of the other things we talked about were certificates, industry certificates, that we currently have four that we do in juvenile hall, but there are a whole lot of them. Like there's a safe food handling one that's only a few hours online, but a student who does that, as soon as they get out, they've got a certificate for safe food handling. So we also, I outlined some of that in the document that I had sent Daniel, and this was for another meeting, but he has, I can send this to you also.
Okay. I would appreciate that.
Okay, I'll send this to you.
If one thing we have is our relationship, our ongoing relationship with the Department of Education has been big to build upon, but I know you folks have been expanding. It's more than just the high school diploma or GED, and it's everything, like you said, Lynn, after they've graduated. Now, what do we do at that time? And there will have a period of time with us. So. Okay. All right. Anything else that may jump out on the program side? Ms. Doyle or Ms. Jose, the kids you represent, do you hear things, something that we may be missing? If the kids said, I wish I just had this, we just something to think about in this section of the type of program. Or Judge, something you've seen, you see enough youth in front of you.
Could I jump in there really quick before Laura and Kim? I'm just it's hard for me. I mean, I pretty much am somewhat knowledgeable about the programs and services that we currently have through probation and the facilities. But I think that, you know, for some of the folks on our committee, it might be nice to have at least, and I hate to do this, but I mean, it might be nice to have it at least identified in some way. The existing programs, because Daniel's proposal, it alludes to we offer existing, but it doesn't really tell everybody on the committee exactly what those programs are, and then eligibility for those programs, because I know some of them may require a mental health diagnosis. I'm not just throwing it out as an example, but you know, it might be helpful, because you know, using the community minds that we have, then they can weigh in and assess better. I don't know, it just would be easier for me, because I'm having a hard time looking at it and trying to identify the gaps or the needs, because I don't really know exactly what's been identified so far as existing programs.
Okay, so a little more detail, Judge, of the existing programs that we're currently providing?
Right,
and
either
who,
that or,
and who provides them?
Right, and eligibility, you know,
eligibility.
Age eligibility, you know, what the capacity is, if we're able to figure out capacity, because there may be a capacity limit that we are at right now. So, you know, and I think that would allow all of us to maybe look at it and then really weigh in as to identifying gaps in those services and enhancements to them.
I was going to chime in on that. We actually, when I used to run OfGrad, we started that a couple years back in collaboration with BCI. So we still have some of that data, but now it's probably a little outdated. And we were, it's probably not timely for this project, but we were looking at picking it back up again under my new organization starting in the fall when the students are back. So we'll have the students run it. Because previously, kind of what you talked about earlier, is we did like a heat map. And this one was specific for adults on the heat map side, just because of the logistics of the youth. But looking at the needs of people returning versus where they were located and the services around them based on their needs. So, you know, I'm happy to provide that information as we get it or as we work on it, because it would definitely be helpful.
Thank you, Megan.
I like that thought, because you know, I think really narrowing in on the organization and services that specifically are able to really work with the population we're talking about, because you know, it is a small niche of the kids who are going to come out from this program. And so I think really looking at which ones are providing services, and I think from what we've seen also, if an organization is lacking in bandwidth, or organizations in the community, maybe thinking about how we could fill some of those gaps and bolstering some of those services. And I can tell you on our end, we're running like crazy in the community, and we're in a lack of capacity for the youth that we're seeing. And so, not to say there's not other services out there, but even having the bandwidth and time to see who's out there who can service the kids that we're talking about coming out from being incarcerated would be helpful. I imagine, though, we'll see some gaps, and the community organizations who are providing services, if there's a way to support, train, and bolster those services, I think we'll help embrace some of our kiddos as well. So.
All right, thank you. Great input. Go ahead.
The only thing I was going to say with, in response to that, Chief, was that along the lines of Judge Motueke, I think it would be great to kind of focus on if we could sort of identify or predict the types of kids, you know, that are going to have certain special needs. And what I was thinking when you asked the question, what gaps do I see? I don't necessarily see gaps in these big ticket items you've talked about, in other words, mental health programs or reentry programs, but where we get the negative feedback from clients, which is maybe why a youth voice would be good at some point to have involved in this, the negative types of feedback that we get is maybe that a program was not culturally appropriate for that kid or their family, or the logistics, as Megan pointed out, you know, made, put obstacles or barriers that were not effectively problem solved for them by anyone in the system, right? There's just like, well, that's what we're expecting you to do. And this is the one we found for you, so figure it out. You know, sort of those types of obstacles, in my mind, it's not so much the big picture, but it is sort of when you get down to the micro level, as Stephen pointed out, you know, what services do we really have that we're actually sending kids to, and how, what is the bandwidth of that organization? What's the, you know, what's the logistics for the kids that they're being asked to serve? So that's sort of the, when I hear feedback, when we hear feedback from our kids, it's the devil's in the details, right? It's like, oh, you sent me to this therapist or this program, but they weren't appropriate for me, and there's not a good way to toggle out of that because there's nowhere else to go, right? Sort of the one-size-fits-all approach, which is not anybody's goal, right? I understand that, but that's sort of the negative feedback that, if you're asking what I think a client perspective would be, that's what the youth perspective would be.
You know, Lori, bring up a great point. I'm going to go up to Kim, too, on that same point, is that everything I'm reading, everything you see, there's not, you know, it's not just go to school, and it's more individualized and how important that is, because maybe the one thing in common the youth has is the 707B offense, but why that youth is in the situation they're in, completely different. So we're dealing with an offense, but really what is the need really breaking down? And you just hear that term individual case plans, it's just so specific. I mean, to Steve bringing up earlier, oh, let's go to gang awareness training. Okay, what if the youth has been in a gang as long as he can remember? It's not awareness at this point. They're very aware of the gang. It's more of now, how is that gang impacting me? How do I move myself from where I am being impacted now further? So thank you, Laura. Kim, how about just a little viewpoint from what you see?
I'll just piggyback on what Judge Motueke and Laura Jose talked about. My DAs, in talking with them, especially in the youth development court, it is that bridge between the culture and the need of the youth in the case plan and actually getting them into the correct programming. So if we could have some sort of, like Judge Motueke approached, if we could have some sort of grid chart that shows what the current programming is, who's the target population in that, how many youth we can serve, we can make a determination based on what we're seeing and maybe statistics and say, listen, the youth that we're finding that maybe coming through DJJ are more in the Santa Ana district, and we're finding there's not a particular program there that is necessary for that particular group of individuals. So I think until we get into the weeds of it, we're really not going to know until we actually look at it. But that's what my DAs are saying, the same thing as Laura. We're not getting that bridge between what we need to program and what's specific as to that individual's case plan.
Thank you. How about you, Don? You're the broker of programs. Just want to hear what you're thinking.
I've been listening and absorbing, and I think I really liked Judge Marique's suggestion to have an inventory, because I think that without knowing what the current landscape looks like, I know Daniel's talked a lot about needing to do more and have more, but we need to know what we have to know what we need more of specifically. And I think knowing where there's strained capacity or where there are limitations will help us identify those gaps a little bit more specifically, beyond just, you know, having mental health staff 24 hours, or, and there's programming beyond what we do as well. I mean, probation is delivering programs also. And then looking at, are there different types of programs that might be beneficial for this population that we're not currently doing? Because I know for mental health currently, what we do is already individualized. That's how we deliver services. If somebody needs to be seen multiple times a week, we do that. If they need to be seen once a week, we do that. So that's already kind of baked in to what we do. But in terms of group curriculum or specific types of groups that might be relevant for this population, those are things that we might want to revamp or look at or offer more or different. And so, you know, just looking at the whole landscape would be helpful, which I know is a little bit of an undertaking, but I think it would be valuable for the group.
So let me ask you this, Dawn, just building upon what you said, and I'm just going to use the healthcare agency. Would you just program services for youth age 14 to 21, and then a list would pop out? I mean, I'm just trying to wrap my head about how do we best compile. I mean, we can say, here's what we do in our facilities now, to your point. We could see who is providing that service, right? You can connect that piece to that piece. This sounds very similar. I said on the homeless, I forget what the county's homeless committee, I was on it, now somebody else sits on it, but it was the same kind of thing, mapping, you know, this. The identified issue is homelessness. So our identified issue are the youth we are dealing that come in through Secure Track, right? They're the population we have. I tell you what, these Zoom squares don't work well for talking with their hands. In person, you would see my hands going way out here, talking big here. But so, Dawn, let me ask you this. Do you see, and everybody's input is important on this, right now with our next meeting or so, coming together of what you're aware of now, as a place to start, like you could come in and go, okay, healthcare agency currently now provides this to probation or the youth we have, and here's other things that we have, then start to be able to whittle away. Same with Steve and Raymond in the community and Megan in the community. This is what we either provide or this is what we're aware of, and now you start matching the pieces that, or seeing what's missing. Maybe it's a better way to say that. And same with you there, Ken, I got you. You have OC social agency, social service agency right above your head to remind me, so.
Yeah, I definitely think, Chief Sentman, that when I was, I mean, as you look at the four facility, you know, juvenile hall and YLA and YGC and YRC, you know, my first thought was, let's look at all of the things that are there and how they're there and how they're showing up. And then beyond that, there's also things in the community, because when youth are no longer maybe involved with these institutions or with YRC, they're reentering, right? They're in the community. So what's available for them there that we're aware of? And how can they link for services? That's, from my perspective, there's a lot. So it's a big conversation, but I'm not as aware of what EK is doing and where they're doing it and what that looks like. So then mapping it is definitely beneficial to the group. I'm being redundant now, but.
I think it goes right to what the judge had said too, is, you know, she's aware, she's just speaking from her experience on the bench, I'm aware of this, but I'm not on the other piece. So let me charge each of you as we start our homework here, because there's going to definitely be some homework is to everybody's point, is bringing to our next meeting. Now, I have to figure out the best way to do this, but at least gathering in your mind what services that are provided, just like you said, Dawn, and then our community partners too. Maybe that's a place to start, because we may either be overlapping right there or replicating, or we both look, wow, we don't even have this, and then our folks in the community says, yeah, we don't have this, but I know where it is, and we can go, you know, search it out and look for it. So, okay, very good. Okay, I want to be able to, I don't know if we're going to get through them all today here, I'm trying to be mindful of the time here, but I want to make sure that when you look at that topic right there, you know, facilities are pretty, I won't say easy, but facilities there are identified programs, placements, services, service providers, are all the next piece there that's just very key too, and I want to be mindful and for our agencies, the supervision piece too. When you say that somebody's supervising the community, that's just a generic term in my mind. There's so much more than just supervising somebody in the community. One thing I'm hearing a lot with other fellow chiefs is how important it is that supervision is connecting people. So that, and I know we've developed these relationships in our community, but how important that is, that the probation officer should know Project Kinship, should know Hire, should know whatever the group that is out there, and should have a relationship there. So it's building together. That helps people too, because that's the bridge that needs to occur. Okay. Okay, I think we've taken a big, so if I can ask each of you just from this page here as for our next meeting is just whether it's bringing ideas or specific programs that we have, and I'll make sure that Daniel helps me out on this side for us, what we're aware of, because at least we can start seeing it, Don, to your point, and start looking at where it is. Or we may realize that somebody had something that we're not using and we don't need to reinvent it. It's there, and just how do we make the connection to that? Okay, on page 7, this is very similar conversation. It's just more specific to the type. So we already talked about, describe how the county plans to apply grant funds to address mental health, sex offender treatment, and related behavioral trauma-based needs for population. So Don, you brought up a great point on the mental health. You know, what we jump out is 24-hour care, because what we look in our mind is, and I'll just remember back to the days I worked there, when a kid went into crisis, we called SIGU. There's so much more I know that's going on, but that's how it was. We responded to the incident as opposed to identifying maybe through assessments, identifying from the youth, you know, what they've been involved in and what they need. So it's an ongoing working with youth. Now, Don, if I understand what you said, we're already doing something to that.
We're not providing services overnight, but when it comes in and we assess them, we assess what their need is, and we develop individualized care plans for them based on our assessment, and then we deliver services to that youth that meet their need. Of course, assuming that they consent to, but we may think somebody needs to be seen multiple times a week, they may not want to be. But we do already tailor our services individually to what we've assessed for the youth and what the youth is indicating that they want to work on. So that's already happening and is part of our system. So when we were talking before about, you know, needing to increase, that this program needs more, we're already, from an individual standpoint, doing what is identified for each youth. So these youth that come in, when they're assessed for mental health needs, we're going to deliver the same individualized care to them that we currently deliver to any other youth. The needs might, you might anticipate that the needs for this group would be different. They might be more involved, but they might not be, because I think youth who have experienced trauma and youth who have mental health issues, again, it's not based on the offense, right? It could be a 707, but it could be that they did something else. But their backgrounds and their mental health needs may be similar. It's just that the offense that they committed and were adjudicated for is different. So our approach to mental health isn't based on the offense. It's based on what that individual brings in, you know, with their kind of biopsychosocial history and what we determine with them that their needs are, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. No, and I'm trying to understand that too, and I've always known it to be individualized. I mean, you just say, hey, you're just going to go to therapy, and a person sits down and they have therapy. It's such more than just that term. But let me ask you this, when I hear Daniel talking about a 24-hour care, I'm trying to see where that would relate, because these youth would be adjudicated. But what if some type of I'll just use the term episode, if that's the right term, a crisis occurs in a a weekend, holiday, or in the middle of the night? Do you think that's where Daniel was coming from on the 24-hour care, meaning like there's somewhere, they don't have to wait till the morning, right? I don't know if that happens, I'm just saying this.
Yeah, I don't, that's how I was hearing it, but I'm not sure. I don't think you who's on the call to clarify that, but I guess I was understanding it to be outside of Sigu's normal business hours that there might be a need for mental health support. Okay. And to staff, and you know, and this is a discussion for another time, but to staff 24/7, we have to look at the likelihood that those things are cropping up in the middle of the night, or you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is reviewed how many, you know, crises have occurred during these times.
Right, and then that will help us determine, you know, what makes sense for staffing. I know when we recently were looking at our crisis assessment team statistics, which is kind of a different topic, but what we found is that our peak hours were, you know, started around 9 a.m. and it dropped off around 8 p.m. And from 8 p.m. to 9 a.m. the next morning, the call volume is exceptionally low because people are sleeping. They're, you know, there's not as much need maybe for staffing, as one example, not necessarily relevant to this group, but just
Yeah. No, I think you just hit the key word there. So what are the peak hours within our facilities? What's the peak hours within the community? What if this youth is on supervision to us and they still need access to the care, as you said? So I'll check with Daniel on that, but I think that's, you know, again, Don, you brought up a great point. We're looking at what we do now, what we plan for now, and how do we address it now? But what is missing?
And the other thing that I think about is, you know, in the event that, you know, because as we're looking at trauma and trauma-informed care and how we work with individuals, you know, if there's a mental health presence 24/7, that might be one way to address it. Are there other training, is there other training that could be provided for staff who are 24/7 that might be able to help de-escalate or address needs in addition to mental health staff, or maybe some kind of, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of a way to deliver something that folks that are available are able to provide some sort of intervention. It isn't necessarily sitting down for an EMDR session, because you're probably not going to do that in the middle of the night. De-escalation of some sort.
No, I think you bring, and I know our staff have gone through and continue to go through those type of things, and just trauma responsive. You know, and I'll make this very simple. If a youth is just being screamed and yelled at all the time throughout their whole childhood, and then we repeat that in our facilities, we just yell their name and, you know, have them move around the facility. We're just building upon something that, you know, that they're already used to. And I know that's something we've improved on, but maybe we just need to identify where we're at and can we build upon that? Because de-escalating, too, is not only a new term, but it's the training of all of, I know for our staff, it's very important, because the quicker you can de-escalate with words or just the presence of the environment that you create without going to other ends is important too.
Chief, if I don't know if this is possible, if we really want to be outside the box, thinking through even for probation staff or all staff to receive secondary trauma training and support. In a sense, RP circles for staffing. I know that for us, preaching to the choir here, all of us get exposed to so much in our work. That's hard to shake off when we go home as well. And so for the last year, actually year and a half, we really started slowly implementing some secondary trauma and support for our staff. And the jury's still out on the data, but I feel like culture-wise, it's helped our folks. And so I don't know if that's something we want to consider for you know, in custody staff, I'm providing something for them to decrease burnout and just that extra support. But the other thing is, one of the difficult things that we see is, you know, once a youth gets stabilized through mental health services and all services while in custody, as you all know, when they get released, they experience so many other stressors and other risk factors that, you know, increase anxiety and destabilize them. And so I don't know if this is an appropriate area, but looking through how to continue that warm handoff in a sense of mental health services and support as youth are released into the community, I think would be a good place to provide resource or some attention to. Because, yeah, we see a lot of times, I'm going to preach to the choir again, youth is doing so well, they've got every resource attached to them, and then life happens once they're released and they end up right back where they're at. And so the other thing, I think I'm probably jumping into the next question, but I do, I think what probation has done over the last couple of years on bringing restorative practices has been really beneficial. And I think that goes hand in hand with the trauma, because many of our kiddos, because of early childhood trauma, have not been able to develop the social-emotional skills, as you know. And RP seems to provide that resource to helping youth create language around around trauma. And so I know that RP has been really effective, and, you know, really big props to probation for allowing that to come into the institutions. And so RP does really provide a great benefit to address trauma.
Thank you, Steve. I think you just said, once again, you know, we can wrap these kids around all these services within our, you know, where we have a captive audience, because they're with us, but they, where they really need it is in the community, and find out where those triggers are. I mean, unfortunately, most of these youth will go back to the community that they came from, or back to a household or environments that may have driven where they're, got them where they're at. And maybe they don't have any choice. That's where they have to go back. Because, it's, I mean, sometimes you say, well, you can't go back home to, you know, where you live there in your community, but that's where they're going to go. And building that capacity, I mean, it's hard enough for them to probably learn that capacity within our facilities, but how important it is to, as you said, the warm handoff into the community and have and building that capacity in the community. I just use our youth reporting centers. You know, if a kid started feeling a certain way or seeing something was starting to happen, like you said, life happens. They can't get the services unless they go back to juvenile hall. I'm not saying that's what happens, but if they went to the youth reporting center, they'll say, they check in there, or a day reporting center type environment, check in there, and they're able to, you know, address what's going on, how they learned how to address, but now they've got somewhere to go to do it, not just try to figure it out on their own. Okay. All right. How about some other thoughts around mental health? Because mental health is one of these things that I find, it kind of reminds me of the EB, you know, evidence-based programming, EBP term. It's just so broad and so general. Mental health is something just gets thrown on there and so specific that everybody could probably use a little bit. But there's extreme cases that are very important that have to be managed much differently than, you know, just building some capacity in a young person. So. Anything else on the mental health piece? Again, we're going to do, this isn't just one day on these. There's no way. I think we're hitting some key points. And I would ask each of you, as you're thinking about for the next meeting and hearing the topics that we're talking about, bringing back so we open those conversations again and, hey, we looked into this and this is what, what we found. Okay, here's one. Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm just wondering if Daniel was talking about this, which I know has been a problem in the past, and the judge might have even more specific cases in her mind, but I know when staff at the hall has 5150 clients to UCI, occasionally those kids get sent back before the hall feels that they're really stable, right? There's this tension between the facility and the legal definitions for the civil hold and the need, the level of care that the staff at the hall feels that they can provide. So I was wondering if maybe he was referring to that. How do we service kids who are really borderline stable when they're returned from the hospital? Judge, you know cases on, we've had that happen quite a bit with our really, really high needs population. And I think, Daniel, one of his big concerns, which I'm sure is all our concerns, is that this particular population is going to include kids like that, that are going to have crisis events that will require hospitalization, but they are not often held for as long as one might want. So. Right.
Laura, just real quick, and I'm going to get the judges in. But this, what you're saying is, and I've heard of these cases too, a kid goes over and they get them stabilized in whichever manner, but they didn't really maybe address what's going on. So the kid just comes back to the hall and repeats the process again, and then now they're back, and we keep going round and round and round and not, you know, and that's a tough one because there's never, and Dawn, you probably hear this too, is, you know, there are not enough crisis beds, so the juvenile hall, the county jail, these facilities become you know, the mental health crisis bed, because ultimately the charge of those staff is to keep the people safe, and that's really what we're trying to do. But it's not really treating; it's more of a maintenance as opposed to truly, you know, treating the youth. And I'm just trying to understand, Laura, if that's what you're talking about—that type of youth.
Yes, I think my guess would be that one of Daniel's concerns is that really, really, really high needs youth. I mean, you're going to have staff that is, you know, trained to manage a youth that's coming out of the hospital, but that, you know, isn't really have a long-term stability, right? Typically, if you were on the adult side, you were on a mental health civil hold, those holds would continue, you know, for 14 days, for 30 days, or you would be put on a conservatorship, right? There would be, or you would be placed in the community when you are prepared to be placed in the community. But I think, and this is just more of a practical experience, I think it's typical that once you finish those 72 hours, maybe a 14-day hold, those kids are oftentimes given back to the hall when they're not quite, you know, haven't really maintained a long-term stability, and they may toggle back to the hospital. So I think those are services, I'm sure that those are the types of kids that Daniel has concern for, having some sort of higher level of treatment available at the hall, or another option for those kids. Another, I mean, I know we've worked on that question in the past, right? But am I missing something, Judge, about that population?
No, I actually just assume that that's the population that Daniel spoke about, because that is a continuing conversation. A small population of our young adults in the juvenile facilities, and I'll call them young adults because usually they're on the cusp of turning 18, and they don't really have a lot of family support as well. So it's difficult, and probation is often tasked with housing, you know, a really high mental health needs youth. And we've had instances where DJJ has actually rejected youth because the mental health issues were too great for them to be able to provide the services that the youth might need on the rehabilitation side. So it is definitely a population that we need to be cognizant of and mindful of when we're trying to figure out appropriate programs and services.
Don, would you be able to make note of that? Because I, in the community, I'm not aware. You know, there used to be that college hospital, different places, and maybe that's where they're still available. Maybe I'm dating myself, but I don't know what's out there at this point.
Yeah, no, the inpatient contracts also sit in my department, so I'm familiar with them, and I'm familiar with the challenge of trying to keep youth in the hospital once their mental health crisis is stabilized, because the providers are not remunerated after the behavioral health crisis has resolved. So if the youth don't have enough criteria to justify that level of care, that provider doesn't get paid. And so that results in their being put back in another setting. And Laura, as you were talking about the adults, I had all kinds of thoughts, because I used to work in our adult inpatient system as well, and I understand how that works. And it is very different for the youth for a lot of reasons, which are probably too much to get into here. But I think that's a valid point in terms of, because we have youth that discharge who aren't in, you know, in juvenile hall, but who are discharged back to their STRTPs, where they need a one-to-one. And the STRTP isn't set to do a one-to-one. So then they're having to look for additional staff and trying to cover that need. That youth doesn't need to be in the hospital, technically, but they're not able to function within the existing program that they're returning to either. So how do you meet that in between need? And whether that's a 24/7 mental health service, or whether that's additional staffing or a unit where people go. I know in the jails they have a unit that is specific for designation, and there's certain staffing. I don't think we have enough youth to justify a unit that's designated because of the staffing requirements for that, which are very extensive. But having something like that, or kind of a certain protocol that could be used for those you maybe would be something that we could identify. I don't know, I'm just trying to think about what might work.
Okay. Again, I want to keep us, these are not one-time conversations, but more importantly, they're going to be ongoing. And I would ask each of you, as you hear the different topics, we will repeat these on our next couple of meetings, probably, and just trying to bring in, either be able to identify what's needed to go see if we can find it, but more importantly, see if we can identify if there's something there we just, some one of us wasn't aware of, which is more likely probably be that we will find it if that's what we need to do. So, okay, anything on the mental health services that would transfer us over into, you know, sex offender? I don't even know what our sex offender specific treatment program is that's different from DJJ, and I don't know if we need to do a little research on what that is. I gotta imagine it's more than just a therapeutic type setting. I thought they had heard something of our staff as, oh yeah, we have a program. I'm not aware what that program is. But I think we need to be mindful of, again, it's not a high volume or a high number of youth, but I know across the state they're talking about that they may look at a regional specific program for this type of youth with this type of charge if needed. But I'm not aware, and I don't know if somebody on call is aware or judge if you've committed a youth that's had, if they're just going to DJJ. I looked at the list of DJJ youth, and I don't think there was too many on for that type of offense or those kind of offenses. So, okay.
We have 707 youth that have push-in services that are contracted. I believe Dr. Merrim's group, is that the name, Dr.?
Is that Wes Merrim? Oh my goodness gracious.
Yes. No,
I remember him as a probation officer, so holy
cow. Yeah, I don't know that he does the treatment himself, but I believe he has some therapists under him. I know of one client I can think of off the top of my head that received push-in services from Dr. Merrim, but that was a client that was a borderline DJJ case, and we kept him local. And that was part of the deal. And predisposition, the minor was receiving those services. And so actually part of the argument for why he should stay local was that he's going to finish those services. So I don't know if there's more than one, but I'm well aware of that one client in particular.
Okay. Well, it's something to look at if these are identified. I mean, when you talk mental health, that is so broad and so large. We've talked to very extreme cases too. Maybe this initial assessment, but that's clearly something that we would want to look into. I think most of the treatments and related behavior with a trauma base, I mean, everything that I'm aware of, and most of our staff I know they're going through training, trauma is now what's being incorporated in that training, because realizing how much trauma is the root of what's happening with some of the kids. So, trying to look here, and again, trying to watch our time here, if we can carry this conversation, but I will look into when, I'm trying to remember, it might have been Daniel tell me that we have that program. I'm going to guess that Wes Merrim is an out-of-custody type therapy type session, if I remember. Actually,
this client was at the hall, and that's why I called it push, I'm making up that word, I don't know if you guys use it, but
what's
it
called?
Push-in services where came in.
Okay.
I don't know if probation paid a special contract. Like, I don't know how that was all paid for or done. I would have to find out, but.
Yes, okay. Because I believe he's an outside provider.
He is for sure. But I know that youth was definitely in custody, for sure.
Okay. And Don, are you aware of any specific type of programs, the healthcare agency, or? Okay.
No, we're not specifically providing sex offenders.
Okay. And again, and as I talk in a larger sense too, we do have these cases of the numbers, whether it's one youth or it's 10, but it's usually a small number. And I know the chief, we're fortunate in the southern region, which is basically from Santa Barbara south, is trying to look at with those type of if that type of youth comes before us, if there was a county that wanted to, and maybe even someday we'd want to. At this point right now, I think we're just focusing on the youth we have, but if there would be to say before the bench, we can bring some type of regional setting. This youth goes to this, you know, this department or this county for a level period of time, and then they come back and do their transition to the community back from us. So there's many discussions with that, but I just want to see if I can move us into maybe another question or so after that. And again, I would ask each of you, as we talk about mental health topics or other specific type of topics, when we come back in our next meeting in a couple of weeks, is just we can be a little more specific on what we may have, or to be able to identify what's needed. Okay, moving over to page 8, describe how you can use a grant to address support programs and services that promote healthy adolescent development and target. You know, I gotta imagine just that topic there, healthy, pro-social. There's a lot of different ways to do it, that each program that we would have a youth involved in would have that component. When you look on page 8 up there at the top, I wouldn't think we want to promote anything but healthy adolescent development, but I think that's something to remember as a committee as we're looking at services, to make sure there's that component. That's like family engagement. I think that's an important piece that we need to be aware of. Was there any other input? Well, actually, both on this page, one's family engagement and one's healthy adolescent development. Is there any other input related to those type of topics, or aware of the programs that we may provide now that encourage both of those? I mean, I know family engagement, Padres Unidos is one I know that we use, and that's all a family engagement type program. But I can imagine healthy adolescent development is a piece of everything Steve does, Megan does, Don does, Lynn does. I mean, that's even our probation staff are we, you know, want them to promote, show a positive and pro-social and healthy environment that they're in. So any input from the committee related to those type of, I think family engagement we need to continue to improve. We were talking about earlier about looking with youth within their communities. I gotta imagine each community there's families that offer a level of support that maybe we're not aware of, but we need to become aware of. I'm always reminded that each youth comes from a community and comes to us with the many needs that they have, but when they return to that community, and I think empowering communities and building that strength in communities is going to be long after they leave us, they're able to still get that type of support that's needed. Should we move that one on there? It's kind of a generic. I would think anything we would want to do with the youth would be healthy. But two topics that we can move on to the next conversation to be inclusive of. I think when we talk about services for youth, though, they both need to include those. Because when you talk family engagement, not every kid's going home to a mom and dad. They may be going home to an uncle or an aunt. We need to really understand individually for each kid who they're going home to and what type of capacity does that person have within their home. Some of these youth are going to go home to maybe not to a home, but a complete stranger, because they don't have a family to go home to. So I think those are both key.
Chief, just two thoughts on that.
Yeah.
I'm just considering maybe some of the school districts for many of our youth come from, and so I don't know if they're, you know, if we want to partner with, for example, Santa Ana Unified School District. I know they have parent centers within the community. I know even their restorative practice interventionists do work with the community, and so that may be a bridge, but also a program called Parents on a Mission. I know that many of us have used it before. I think probation may have as well. I know that when I was at the Department of Ed, we used Parents on a Mission with Richard Ramos. I think that had some accolades from the White House back in the day, but I want to just put that name out there as a resource if helpful.
Parents on a Mission, is that national?
Absolutely national, yeah.
Okay.
Believe. I can do some more research, though. But yeah.
Okay, and again, this is what I'm asking everybody in the committee as we think about, as you're going through and thinking about different things we do or need, being mindful that the statute does require, and I would expect each one would have both those, but they're important. Again, I'm very aware of Padres Unidos, but I know there's other family engagement programs, but how impactful those are to you, because there may have been something that occurred within the family that the support wasn't there, so the youth took the path and ended up with in the juvenile justice system. So Again, I would ask for especially our community folks and Dawn and Ken within social services. You do a lot of family engagement type of work. You're reunifying families, I believe, is one of the main drivers in social services. So I would ask you, Ken, if you could be thinking about different things that maybe we haven't seen or have not used in the probation world, if we could, both of you.
And Chief, does that also include the adolescent development? Because I can't even think of, I know everybody must do it, but what is the specific programs or services that we have?
Yeah, I did raise two girls that are doing pretty well in life, but I can't take full credit or a little partial credit maybe. I would need to understand that topic, Judge, to your point, a little bit better. Are we talking about milestones? I mean, we get a 14-year-old compared to what a 22-year-old needs. There's clearly a big gap in between there. Dawn, are you aware of programming levels, or Ken, that the county has at this time that may be provided at Orangewood or that we have contracted out before?
Chief, this is Ken. Not specifically, but certainly there's some folks I can speak with, and I can dive on that.
Yeah, I think we're going to need some input. I'm not writing near as much on these two topics, so clearly we don't have the experts here, but we all know people.
Orangewood and then also through our transitional AG programs.
Okay. And Dawn?
The question, as you were talking about it, Chief, I was thinking kind of what you were saying, like, do any of our programs not promote that? I would hope not. I don't have a specific program that I can point to that says this program promotes it, but I don't have any programs that don't promote it. So I guess if there were, you know, specific group programming that we might do that maybe had that as a focus, looking at adolescent development and what's normal for those phases, you know, in their kind of phase of life, and then having a group that's maybe focused on that might be something that we could do that would specifically target this or address this need. For healthy adolescent development, but really all of our services should be geared toward helping an individual develop in a way healthy.
Dawn, is it to your point, though, where they're at? Again, I just use let's just say a 14-year-old to a 20-year-old, what they're going to need. Well, the 20-year-old should be above and beyond the adolescent portion, but maybe that's why they're still there, because they didn't address, you know, back the responsibility. We had a 14-year-old. I got to imagine Judge Marucci's going, hey, this kid's 14, and they're going to be staying with you this window of time. We need to address those milestones that would have been met had they not been with us.
And I think those are things that we would be identifying, or I hope we would be identifying and working with them on during their time in our services.
Dawn,
I'm glad it's called out.
Yeah, and Dawn, in your experience, and Ken, I'm going to ask you two folks just because of where in the spaces you both work in, is I can't imagine there's a 1 through 10 guideline. If you meet all these, you're there. But if there's some type of literature or some type of training, something that can assist us with that, I think that's very important. If you just look at the age, just go purely the age we could be dealing with. There's a big gap in between those two points. And then you can go with, you know, females, and then you can go with transgender. I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, that's a wide open topic there, adolescent development there, and I would hate to miss that. But to your point, Dawn, you would hope that that's attached to those identified programs, but to your point, maybe it needs just to be called out and identified a little bit better, and not just assumed it's happening, but how will you address the 14-year-old? How will you address the 17-year-old?
Right, and making sure that the staff that are working with you from a mental health perspective are familiar with developmental milestones. I mean, they are licensed clinicians who work with this population on a regular basis, but, you know, finding a way to call that out, or like I said, having a group that maybe we find a catchy name for it, because I don't think anybody wants to go to a group called Healthy Adolescent Development. right?
No.
But if we could find something that was catchy that maybe people were intrigued by and they wanted to come in, maybe that's, you know, one way that we could, you know, we're addressing it kind of in an integrated fashion in their care, but then we also have like something we can spotlight to say this particular program does this thing, or this particular group make sure that we don't lose a focus on this thing. And I would have to talk with my program staff that would actually be delivering something like that to make sure that that makes sense, but that might be a way that we could address it. And then just to speak about family engagement, I want to echo that I think family engagement is something that has become more and more important, and something that we all want to make sure is integrated in whatever we're doing for youth when they have families that are available, either biological family or family that they select, you know, that they have support, a significant support person is important. So engaging those individuals is key.
You know, what I saw in family engagement too is if we put all of our energy in making the young person better, but we didn't invest any on the family side, they're not going to know what to deal with when this youth comes back and, you know, displays new behaviors or healthy adolescent development they start showing. We'll bring it back that way. But family engagement's important. Having personally witnessed family members break down and just cry and understand where they're at, but, and then getting that support, even if it's amongst their own peer groups of family members helping each other out, that again is going to lead to the success of the youth. So, okay, so all of us, as we go out and look at different programming, we know that the importance, using Don's words, was a great way to say it, family engagement, and then the healthy adolescent development. Okay, so page nine, you know, reentry, including planning, linkages, support, employment, housing. This might be our topic that takes us through the rest of the day here, because this is a big one. But, you know, one thing I've noticed is that we never do it well enough, but there has been a huge focus in the county with integrated services on the reentry part, probation. Judge Moreke sits in there. We're all part of this understanding that, again, we can make folks better, youth better, in our facilities, but if they don't have that services between the day they step out from the facility and back into the community and build that capacity in them, the success isn't there, and reentry is the key piece in that, and that transition between the two. I'm just trying to think, Steve, maybe just give me some of the ideas that you guys work on. I when I do think of reentry, I do think of Project Kinship and others, but your square is right here in the center of my squares of experts here. So when you see that term, you know, addressing reentry, where do you think where you sit, as a probation person? What's in there we're missing?
I think for my gut immediate thought is the ability to collaborate with all of us here. I think is really critical. I think it's a lot easier said than done. And I think Orange County, just from knowing all of you here, you're doing a pretty good job on being able to collaborate. I also think that reentry, as I've heard from many of you before, is it starts previous to post-release. And so I think the more collaboration, the more organization we could create together to help the youth with all these different resources, while in custody, I think for me, when I think reentry, that's where it starts. And then obviously the warm handoff on being able to find services that really address the needs, and they're able to get the youth to the service, to the organization. So for example, I think for us, what we've learned is the use of some counties call them credible messengers, some call them community intervention workers, some call them navigators. But I think one of the new cutting edge things are to be able to use folks with lived experience who are trained to help support the mentorship. I think has been really important. And I think for Orange County, we are leading the way in many ways of having been able to include them in our work. And so I think all of that is helpful for us. When I think about reentry, it's really doing the work beforehand, being able to collaborate, but really being able to provide those ongoing services as they get released. And so, you know, that includes workforce, education, mentorship, mental health, yeah, all the stuff that we know. But I think filling the gaps of being able to keep the youth engaged once released through mentorship and navigation has been really important for us. I mean, Raymond, I don't want to embarrass him, but he leads this, a lot of this work for us. And so if it's okay, I'd be curious to know, Raymond, what you think on when you think about reentry and especially the gang impacted youth and the ones that are really difficult to work with. I mean, what's been really effective for you?
I could tell you on a personal experience. What worked for me was, reentry did start before I was released, and it really started way before my release date. So, going through certain programs gave me the coping skills and the thinking errors and what to expect once I was released. But once you're released, it's when everything just hits you. Everything just hits you at one point, like everything like you learned, you know, previously to get released comes into play. And I think what helped me and a lot of individuals that we mentor, that we work with, is providing a space, somewhere where they could be at, where it's not so much systems, more where it's like less anxiety, where you're kind of seen and protected there, and where you're able to identify with other individuals that are still going through the same struggles. You know, like, we're with you on this. Like, I know what you're feeling. I know the process that it's going to take for you to overcome it, and the obstacles you're gonna face, and you're not on this journey alone. It's just supporting them through it. And I think the first 3 months are the most critical ones. And once we get them past that point, then they're in a better state. You know, they're able to get employment, to get their needs met. So it's, I think, post-release aftercare is very very vital here.
I think if I could jump in one last thing, what's been really good about what Raymond's saying is we're able to collectively bridge them to the resources that are available. So I know, like, at the junior college level, you know, we have Project Rise, but like Project Rebound, not to embarrass Raymond, but, you know, he's into his school in Cal State Fullerton, and that program is specifically folks who've been incarcerated, and they offer free tuition, you know, and so if we could get the kids ready for programs like Project Rebound, we could pipeline them right into the university system. I know that there are many different organizations that are popping up within the UC and Cal State system that are providing free schooling, free resources. And so I think being able to provide that space, working together, will help us bridge our youth into these resources that are really available. It's a really exciting time for us right now.
Go ahead, Raymond. And just to chime in a little bit, it's like not everybody's into school, so there's a lot of individuals that school isn't for them. What helped a lot of us was learning a skill. A lot of us became barbers in there. So that gave us more of an opportunity. Like, I don't got to go back to my old ways. I have a skill now. So if I can't meet my needs, at least I have something I could resort to. And that kind of helps reduce anxiety as well. Like, I have a skill now.
Okay. You know, I was just going to ask you, Raymond, and I met you several occasions, and I like just being very candid about what you're saying is to understand that that it's not easy, and identifying that window of time, like you said, the first 3 months is how critical that is to land somebody in a place where they believe they can be successful. And I think overall, and I've watched my I hate to say this, but 35 years experience of doing this, that expecting somebody just to come out from this environment and just be successful, it's very difficult. Because Steve said it early, life happens, and some of those things don't change, and you're now meeting it face-to-face, and what chances do you make? I think, you know, you bring up another great point. Education is so important, and it does take kids to and youth to a certain level, but that skill piece is big, too, to find having kids understand. And I think when Lynn was talking about certificate programs, whether it's barbering or it's safe care, handling of food. I hear a lot about coding on the computer side and kind of looking where technology is moving to. You know, we're coming, this is an interesting time for youth and adults to come out of, you know, in reentry efforts. We're coming out of a worldwide pandemic. which now there's a whole other influx of people that don't have jobs either. So, you know, it's already difficult as it is, and I think we need to be mindful of really the reality of what's going on and what these youth are facing into 2022, into the future, in 2021 and into the future. So I appreciate that input there, because I think that's important. And I can still remember being a probation officer, and I think in words I would say, you know, I expect you to not go do these things and just go get a job and, you know, just go to school. But that's easier said than done. It's easier for my words to say that, but the reality for somebody to go do that is tough, real tough. So, okay, interesting term you brought up real quick is post-release. We used to have a post-release supervision unit in our department. Many years ago, and it would work with youth that used to go up to Los Pinos, a little bit older before they transitioned out, and it really was, I'll use the word intensive, but that post-release was intensive for those first couple of months of really engaging, and not engaging to try to get them back in the system, but engaging to them to settle into the community in a proper area and be successful. So. Go ahead, Steve, I'm sorry.
No, sorry, Chief, just two quick things. I know that Medi-Cal services has been helpful. And so I think recently we've been hearing from folks, if I'm not sure how it really works, I have to ask some of the specialists on juvenile Medi-Cal. But the other piece, Chief, I think when we had legal services from the Public Defender's Office, that was a really important service that people in the community wanted. I'm not sure how that works for our juveniles, but having that available did many things. One, it helped them with the record, but also it gave people hope to feel like, you know, hey, if I get my record expunged or sealed or a family member, then we have an opportunity to equate it with maybe I can get a job. I didn't know until 2 years ago that there are over 46,000 collateral consequences to one felony conviction. It really opened my eyes even doing this work. And so I think stuff like that, I think, is helpful. And then the last thing I'll say is, big props to Judge Motoki here with Youth Development Court. I think one thing about that court that many of our youth see is also seeing even the district attorney's office to be part of that collaborative and to saying, hey, we also want public safety. We're in it with you. I think the more representation our folks see from the community, from all of us here, helps them feel included. And it really does a lot for them. It gives them hope and it makes them feel like, you know, everybody's out for the same thing, to want our communities to be safer. And I will say that we get a lot of comments saying that it's really good to see all partners in this discussion. So.
You know, Steve, it's interesting that you say that, because when you look at all of our collaborative courts, and obviously our department, myself, are involved in those, and now as we build, the Youth Development Court, how important that is, because, I've seen it firsthand when you have an individual that's at their lowest point and they've raised themselves to the point where they're going to be successful. But you have all the partners. I've seen, you know, the officer that arrested the person, the district attorney that prosecuted, and the defense attorney that, you know, guided them through the process, and everybody there. It does put, when you really think about it too, it does put everything back on that person when they're ready for it to go take it on without all of those system partners, you know, there and how they're going to do it. So I think we were ahead. Thank you, Judge Motoki, for thinking about this will be a specialty type court when these youth, because they're going to be going to court every 6 months, potentially. If I remember right, there's different pieces of it. And how important, it shouldn't just be the youth and you. Let's just say it's your calendar, Judge. It should be the probation officer and everybody that's as possible that's a part of the process, just to build that success for them. That's what I've seen in collaborative courts. It's labor intensive, but the benefit is the success at the other end. And each partner that's here has always had somebody in the room there with them throughout it. So, okay. So again, we're going to keep getting deep in these. But again, I would ask each of you as you go back to Steve said, lives happen. We go back where we are, and for our next meeting, just thinking about different areas we can bring. I hear a lot about system navigators too. Steve, I heard you say that, and I don't know what the right title is, but I would tell you a probation officer's job is often to navigate, but I don't know if that's always appropriate. Should they be navigating every piece? There are a lot of other mentors and navigators out there that have a level of experience that maybe we don't, so I think that's something to look into, and I don't even know if that's the right term, but I understand what the action is of the person, so that's important.
Chief, just to piggyback onto that, I think it's a significant part of our discussions for this reentry piece, because when we developed the YDC court, that was the number one kind of resounding suggestion from a lot of our formerly incarcerated youth that we sat down and spoke with to get their input for what they needed and what was lacking in that transition, because probation, as you know, was doing some great things in the facilities, but then when we're talking about, you know, getting out to the community, like Raymond said, getting out, being released, you know, it just all hits you. So it's really important that we get that youth voice, especially those with lived experiences, and get their input as to what they really need on the reentry side. And I know that one of the biggest pieces is the mentorship, which I think PK, Underground Grit, and Neutral Ground, at least as partners with YDC, are able to provide early on for these youth, so that they can walk with them as they step out of the facilities. So just think it's something that we need to make a big, huge star next to and make sure that we support those programs.
Well, and I agree too, because I also think there's the piece, Judge, that you mentioned, and not only the support on the positive side, but if a person starts heading down that wrong path, maybe they address it quicker than where the, so it doesn't have to be system involved to address it, they're going to be addressed in just a conversation. You know, if the kid were to hear from somebody, hey, you know, you continue down this path, right now, you know, the systems are built upon, you know, the probation officer hears it and they have to address it, as opposed to how do we maybe intervene quicker before it has to come to that point. Okay, I got a big star there is what you asked for. I don't know if you'll be able to see it on the screen here, but I did put a big star on the piece of paper. So, okay, I want to take just a little more time. I'm actually trying to take us right up to, I'm going to stop before we get to page 12 on the facility plan. We have some of that in place, and I'm going to ask Daniel as well as Brian to bring that for next time, if we can maybe cover these next two sections. I think we're starting to overlap a little bit. And I just want to make sure that we're using our time, but that when we meet again, that we bring back different programmings, because now we're breaking down programs that are, one, evidence-based, promising, trauma-informed, and culturally responsive. We have said all of these things throughout our conversation over the last couple hours, and I think it's just to be mindful, just like, take me back to the adolescent, healthy adolescent development. You know, we would expect that from each program. I believe that any type of programming that we're looking for the youth we're going to serve should be evidence-based, because that's how you're going to determine whether it works or not. Promising, that goes without saying. And again, trauma-informed, and I'm just speaking from one agency, is that is a component. But one that's growing, what I'm hearing a lot about is, and Laura, thank you for that, on the culturally responsive, how important that is. In understanding, seeking training, make sure people understand that, but making sure that we put youth in the right type of programs that are culturally responsive. They're not just a title of a program and I complete the program and I'm on my way, but understanding the cultural side of that. Does anybody on the call have any input with those type, or is that pretty much an understanding as a group here that we understand that those components all need to be the drivers of what's needed for the youth we're serving? Anybody disagree with that? I'm just making sure Brian's listening to me there. He's handled four other calls while staying on this one for me today, so I appreciate that. So, okay, we'll continue those conversations. So again, just some of our values and our drivers for the type of programming and support we're looking for our youth, again, should be evidence-based, promising, trauma-informed, and a real big one is the culturally responsive, how important that is. Okay, and then, well, this is something we can always grow upon, but we're fortunate on our call today that our programs and our partners in this initiative as we move forward are non-governmental or community-based providers, and we've got a few of you on the call here today, and I think we need to look to grow that, and I would ask that from not only folks like Don that's out there looking for different programs, or we are too, but understand that in our communities are people that want to help, but actually should be the ones helping, and we identify who those may be. I'm very familiar with other communities across the state of California that have a much larger community involvement. I'm also aware of some probation departments that have no community involvement. We're fortunate to have some very good ones, but I think we can always look to to be better. Judge, you mentioned several different groups that, you're working with in the Youth Development Court. So, again, it's just another thing I think we need to be mindful and aware of as we move forward. So I'm going to take a sip of some iced tea here and just think this through here. And I'm just trying to kind of bring us to a level of closure today, almost three hours of this. Anything that we missed so far? I'm just trying to look back where we've been today. I want to leave everybody with, for lack of a better word, a little bit of homework when we come back next time. Something I would ask us all to keep in mind, you know, I've heard it too, we're very fortunate. Not many of our youth go to DJJ, but whether it's one youth or have gone to DJJ, or whether it's one youth or we're in the, you know, we're at a point now in the juvenile justice system where we have the capacity here. And I just thank each one of you that's on this call today, knowing that we will, it's a lot of work, but I think foundationally we've got a good part of it here. We just need to map it out and figure out where we're at. So looking at those first few pages, Judge, I will take your recommendation, unless it was a court order, but I think it's a recommendation on the front part of what right out of the Welfare Institution Code identifies our target population. Some of the demographics, we will look at that from probation also for our next meeting. Just trying to look through. In all the programs that all of us have talked about, I would just ask of you is not only look at where we're at, but where can we get bigger and enhance and where we need to be and identifying what we're missing. We did have a speaker from the public. I think it's real important, and I don't know how to best get to it today, but I think on this committee we do need to have you know, a formerly system-involved youth. I don't know how to best do that right off the top of my head. I know, Raymond, you've shared your experiences, but I'm talking about, you know, if we can get somebody here, and I would maybe even look to you guys at Project Kinship, and Megan possibly may have some recommendations, but I think it's real important. I mean, I did my internship at the California Youth Authority, and so it's not the California Youth Authority and DJJ, and I have really no idea what it. I have a rough idea hearing from all the partners, but really what does it mean and what do we need to do to provide our youth the best service? And sometimes that's getting the information out. I've been fortunate to work with, I've done a couple of youth panels at the Safe Schools Conference where these young people are 19 and 20 and they've been at our facilities. And I was very impressed. You know, they've kind of reached that level where they're there for the reasons to get better and help others get better. And I would think that's what we need on our committee too. So something to consider. So let me ask you this, Jamie. So we got to remember all the Brown Act and anything here. Now none of this has to be public comments on this part, or do we need to ask for public comments?
Yeah, public okay. Comments on every item.
Okay, very good. All right, so before I open it up to public comments, is there anybody from the committee? Any more input? We know we've got a lot of information. I figured this first meeting would be a whole lot of information. Is there anything from the committee before I open up to public, and then I'll give our item number four. So go ahead, Jamie.
Okay, for item number three, if anybody wishes to speak, if you could hit star 9 or the raise hand icon on your Zoom app. We're just down to two people now. No, nobody for item three.
Okay, thank you. The last part of item number three, I apologize, is the plan, budget, development, and submittal to the state. I forgot to mention, we already have a plan in process, the CCP, Community Corrections Partnership, as well as the JJCC. We submit reports and budgets to them. So for our next meeting, I will talk with our CEO's office to see if that can be consistent for the county on how we submit those forward from the committee, the work that we're going to do. So I forgot to mention that piece on there on the last part. And then item number four is discussion of subcommittee member group reports. For lack of a better title, all of us as we talked through the first 8 or 9 pages of this plan. I would just ask, as we come back next time, if there's a report out that healthcare agency or social services or Project Kinship, as we go through these topics, if you can, we'll leave this as a standing item to report out. If you have additional information related, we're looking at probation to bring back some of the demographics. So that's what I would look at number 4, but we're also going to need a public comment on number 4 too. Jamie?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Okay. Is there any committee questions or guidance for number 4?
I did have a question.
Yeah, Dawn, go ahead, please.
As far as our report out next time on June 3rd, is that if we have, I'm not saying I would necessarily have a PowerPoint, but I'm hoping that I will. And if I do, do I need to get that to Jamie by a certain date? Because it needs to be publicly posted. So our meeting is June 3rd. So when would that presentation need to be to Jamie?
If it's June 3rd, trying to see when I would post the agenda, would probably be around May, usually probably the Friday-ish before, maybe May 28th. But if you don't have it that soon, as long, if you have it before, that's fine. I can always post it later, just as long as everybody gets it at the same time.
Okay.
Thank you, Dawn, for that.
The 28th is preferred.
Thank you, Jamie. And for anybody into the future, if you have the handout requested from the committee or you want to bring that through, we have to be mindful. Thank you, Jamie, for that. As we would need to post that with the Brown Act. Okay, so public comments then, Jamie?
We have one attendee left. If you wish to speak, if you could hit *9 or the hand raise icon on your Zoom app.
You're talking about the name Jennifer Palmquist?
I'm sorry?
Are you talking about the name that's on?
On the attendee list. There's only one person left. Yeah.
Okay.
We started out with 4. Now there's 1. So, yeah. But there's no requests for item 4.
Okay. Okay. So before we adjourn this, our next meeting will be June the 3rd, Thursday, June the 3rd. It'll be at 2 p.m. and it will be virtually. I'm hoping after June 3rd, we can go in person, which will make it a lot easier, I know, for me. Hopefully for you, too. I just want to thank each of you. That was, when I looked at all this information, I was like, wow, we've got a lot to cover, but I think we've got the right people on the committee to assist and get us where we need to be. So with that, thank you, everybody. Oh, Dawn, yes.
Sorry, I apologize. I have one more question. If we're starting at 2, are we to anticipate that that's a 1-hour meeting, or is it a longer than 1-hour meeting, just so I know how much time to reserve?
I'm just going to add that on.
I'm sorry. Why don't we put us at 2 hours?
Okay. So 2 to 4.
2 to 4.
Third Thursday.
Yeah. Just to initially here, if you look how much we consumed and talked about today, Dawn, I think I don't want to cut us short when we're gathering so much information. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Jamie? Did I miss anything?
Nope.
Okay. I appreciate not only seeing everybody, but all the information, and we'll talk to you soon.